Consequence Podcast Network.
I'm Allison Shoemaker.
I'm Clint Worthington.
I'm Julie Starbird.
And I'm Caroline Sita.
We are just going to talk about television for a while. That is a thing that we do. This is our very first one that wasn't me and Clint talking about One Day at a Time for 30 minutes, which got cut down to 7 minutes of just explaining the show.
Yep. But someday we will get to talk about One Day at a Time.
Oh, we'll talk about it today.
Yes.
One day, this day at a time.
This day at a time. Yes.
This is it. I love it so much.
Yes.
On this podcast, we're going to talk about television. It's going to be stuff that we watch this week. Some of it will be old. Some of it will be new. Some of it will be stuff we love. Some of it will be stuff that we don't love. Some of it will be Nas with the National Symphony Orchestra.
Yes.
Which I'm very excited about.
Which is a thing
about.
We love. Yeah.
And we have no idea what it's going to be like. So apologies in advance for how it sounds kind of like weird and strange.
Because we're still figuring out the format.
It's
yeah.
a pilot.
Yeah.
It's
right.
a, you know, it's just, it's like... God, I was trying to remember a really bad pilot, and I just don't watch too many of those anymore.
It's not a bad pilot, but the Golden Girls pilot that has that extra gay character that they cut out after. Yeah, Coco. I think we were talking about this.
Oh, resident Golden Girls expert, Julie
Starbird. So think of all the things that you don't like about this first episode as the Coco, and we'll quickly cut it out of future episodes.
Mm-hmm. R.I.P. Coco.
Yeah.
Before his time.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
He was too good for this world. But we should probably explain our credentials. I mean, you and I, we write for Consequence of Sound.
Yeah.
You also write for other places.
Yeah, so this is a podcast of the Consequence Podcast Network, CPN, which is cool and new and awesome. We all also do other podcasts. You can hear Julie and I on Podlander Drunkcast and Outlander Podcast, which is exactly what it sounds like. Mm-hmm. You can hear Caroline and I on Debating Doctor Who, which is exactly what it sounds like. You can hear Clint on Alcohollywood, which is slightly more complicated than it sounds.
A little bit, yeah. And also on Nathan Rabin's Happy Cast.
Yeah. Caroline and I both write for the AV Club. Clint writes lots of places. Julie is hilarious.
We're just happy to have you
and
here.
And is also a part of a really cool riff track group here in Chicago called Down in Front.
Yes.
We're just people who watch television. Some of us for money, and some of us for pleasure, and some of us for both.
And in this case, right now, for the promise of more money in the future.
Yeah, well, God, one hopes.
Yeah, fingers crossed.
So the first thing we're going to attempt to talk about is shit that happened on TV this week. So what the hell happened on TV this week?
Oh, man, a lot happened on TV this week. Well, first of all, the most important thing we want to talk about is the Good Place finale.
Yeah.
Season 2 ended in a really, really fascinating way. I mean, like, the show has never been afraid to change directions. Even in this season, I feel like we've had 4 different shows. Mm-hmm. And even in this final pilot, like, I mean, obviously spoilers ahead if you haven't watched The Good Place. But
yeah,
if
skip
not,
ahead
you should.
To whatever minute mark
I'll
is
do
gonna
time
be in the notes.
Codes. Yeah. It'll be fine. Long story short, the group is in this sort of purgatory. Maya Rudolph, as Jen, is about to condemn them to the bad place when Michael swoops in and has a different idea.
Wait, y'all both watched, right?
Oh. Yes.
Oh, thank
okay,
God.
Okay, good.
Oh, God.
Woo.
It's just, I don't, there aren't that many shows where I actually think, no, I can't possibly spoil that for you. That would be unkind. But just, no,
well,
I
it's
never.
It's just like realizing, I was just realizing this. I was explaining The Good Place to my friend who hadn't seen it. And I realized I can only explain the first season's premise. Because it's such a different show now.
Back to what we're talking about this, I struggle with This Is Us. Do you reveal the twist at the end of the pilot when describing the show?
Right.
And obviously
this
The Good
is
Place
us.
Is a different case because the twists are ongoing.
And one thing that's great about this finale is it becomes more of a showcase for Kristen Bell. It kind of comes full circle because it was her show in the beginning and then it morphs into more of an ensemble thing by season 2 especially. But here, like, you know, the one way they try to get them into The Good Place is realizing, oh, we need to just like send them back to Earth and give them a slight push in the right direction towards being good.
So this is actually the thing that I would most like to talk about, because I have seen two different reactions to this episode. And what's funny is most people don't think of the fact that there's the other option until they start talking about it to someone who had the exact opposite reaction.
Yeah.
Because I was talking to Tom like he and I had had the same experience, and he was like, no, that isn't what happened. I was like, well,
what?
No, of course it's what happened. So, for everybody, do you think they got sent back to Earth, or do you think it's another simulation?
Ooh,
back to Earth.
Back to Earth
is what I thought.
Simulation.
That's what I think,
Simulation.
Whoa.
How else could Michael just show up on Earth? See, it's another simulation.
He can do whatever he wants.
He can do whatever he wants.
I think it's that just like
he is Ted Danson.
I just think it's like just like they all thought they were in the good place. They all think they're still alive.
It's more wheels within wheels.
They've been put in this world where they think they're still alive. God, I don't even know if the memory will be erased, if they'll remember the lives they have. Mm-hmm. But because Michael like leaves a room and comes back, I have to assume he went through some portal mm-hmm. to whatever. Medium place, good place, bad place, somewhere else.
Well, I do theorize that if it is real, Michael just, he has the ability to come down to Earth, but because he's Ted Danson, he can only come down in the role of a bartender.
As Sam Malone. Specifically, you saw that towel toss.
A bartender at Sting's Desert Rosé.
Which weirdly in the wine shot at the very end of the episode, strangely resembles the hotel bar version of Cheers. I don't know if you noticed it. It's got that central square with the horseshoe around it. I was like, kind of looks like weird 90s Cheers.
Right. And also if it ends up being the real world, and obviously I'm sure we're getting a season 3, but.
Oh, yeah. Already renewed. A while ago.
Right.
I think it's one of two established NBC renewals, and the other one is This Is Us.
Nice, nice.
So,
but if it were real, this would almost be a decent series finale. Yeah. I think like getting sent back for that final act, and you would just end the show on that promise of, oh, maybe she is going to earn her place in the good place. I guess I'm in that position where like I'm at a point in the show where like if I stopped watching, I would be at a nice sort of capsule.
Oh, I would not
show.
Not even sort of. And it's not just that I want more. It's mm-hmm. that there. I rewatched this morning for the purposes of this conversation. And mm-hmm. I think there's this moment when they come up with the idea, like Michael and Jen are having their, I don't know, brain conversation where they're not acknowledging what's actually happening and they're just talking between themselves. And she says, well, for it to work, there would have to be absolutely, you couldn't tamper with it at all.
Yeah.
No interference. And he's like, yeah, of course. And then, of course, he interferes by the end of the episode. So, and there are very few non-deliberate moments on The Good Place. So I think, like, mm-hmm. my concern is that Eleanor is going to find Chidi, just mm-hmm. like in the season 2 premiere, start to become better, and it's all going to be null and void because Michael interfered. And I have to imagine, because Janet is the one watching Jason and Tahani's little ticker tape. Those were
nobody
so
gives a
cute.
Shit about Tahani.
Yeah. Yeah, it was really just I don't think anybody was watching Chidi's either.
No,
they were
it was
watching
just
Eleanor and Jason. Yeah.
Oh, he was occasionally touching Chidi's.
Yeah, but they didn't. They were very
specific. They have their favorite people that they're watching.
Well, that was another cool thing about this particular episode. I appreciated like the deliberate, bold choice to just focus on Eleanor, like just mm-hmm. to kind of go back to the beginning, because it gave Kristen Bell room to do a lot of, you know, front end acting. You know, she got, it was a star turn, which
to
is
do
really nice.
Just eye
a
acting.
A lot of eyes,
a lot of,
which
like,
was great.
Squinty.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, so many shots featured her mm-hmm. close-up of eyes.
Yeah.
You know, so it was really cool to like get the room to focus on one person's story.
Because this is a good place, it'll probably all be wrong. But it seems like an interesting setup for at least the first part of season 3, right? Like the mm-hmm. Tahani episode and the God, I cannot. I cannot wait to see how Jason gets out of that safe, guys.
Oh,
do they drill holes in it? Like, what do they do that he gets
out
of the...
Maybe they literally all get literal pushes, so he pushes the safe over and falls open and he gets out.
Maybe.
I don't know. Ow. It's probably
Tahani
really lame.
Gets pushed aside by her sister, who then gets killed by the statue.
Oh my God, what would happen to a Tahani alternate future where she gets to be the focus of
her
family?
Well, it's worse.
Yeah. Oh.
Because then she's the reason why her
she owes everything to her sister.
Like, her sister gets martyred.
Including the final sacrifice.
You know,
that
this
would
is
be
the
fucking hilarious.
Penultimate episode of the season. But I really loved that scene with Tahani and her parents.
Oh,
where
she
took
a Cheeto.
Yes.
And her mother's face. Sheer disgust.
Yes. Oh, it was beautiful.
I actually, to counter your point, I mean, mm. I always like watching Kristen Bell, but I feel like season 2, the thing I've loved about season 2 is that it has been more ensemble focused than the first season was. And mm-hmm. I was actually a little bit bummed out to lose that in the finale. Like, okay. I feel like I was invested in the group as a whole.
Did it feel like backtracking or...
Just that I wanted to see, not that like narratively backtracking, but just that I was like, I'm equally invested in Jason and Chidi and Tahani, and to feel like, oh, now I have to wait a whole season. Like, the show didn't prepare me to say goodbye to those characters when it narratively did. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? Like, I didn't know, oh, this was going to be the last Tahani scene until next season.
So Maya Rudolph snaps her fingers.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like that was a little bit jarring to watch, I think.
I agree with that.
Yeah. I certainly wish I had seen more of all of them, which is part of why I was so excited that she flew all the way to freaking forking Australia at the end.
Right.
Have you guys heard this? So there's a bit of it is either a clue or a continuity error, which is that early in season, I think it's season one, they had established that Chidi actually speaks French and that The Good Place was just translating.
I rewatched the pilot. Yeah, that was right.
And then when she opened his door today, I was like, he doesn't speak English, but he had already been on YouTube speaking English. And I was like, wait.
So it's unclear if that is a clue to like something that Allison's saying, like this is another simulation, or if it's just, hey, let's not be beholden to this thing that we established.
Right. I think that theory is really fun and cool, but they also show Chidi teaching in Australia. In English, because his friend with the red cowboy boots. Tahani and Eleanor and Jason are all speaking English because it's their first language. God, now I just want a bit where Tahani switches between a whole bunch of languages in her head because she speaks however many languages.
26, I believe.
Oh, right. And then it's all just English the entire time. I want that.
That's funny.
God, that Maggie Smith line made me laugh really hard.
Yeah.
Mostly because I love a Downton joke in any shape or form. Yeah. Okay, other thoughts about the finale? Things we liked, things we didn't like.
Maybe. I hadn't thought about it being a simulation, but I think that makes more sense because of Michael's reappearance. Because I was a little bit pissed when he showed back up.
I think it opens more narrative possibilities, too. Because
I was like, this is against the rules. Automatically, Jen would know, and it would be null and void.
Right.
Because it was very specific that nobody could.
It's a good Janet pun.
In the void. What void? Derek! I also agree with Caroline that they... When all the other characters disappeared, I was a little like, oh, okay, now I have to wait. And like Neil and I went back and looked at the list, and I was like, is there one more episode? There's not. And I was like, all right, I'll wait again. I like you, Good Place. I like you.
I'm curious to see if season three will be more like season one in the sense that we're going to track, you know, their slow progress on Earth, or if it'll be more like season two where they're constantly resetting. And I feel like the show could go either way. It could be that we're in this either Earth simulation thing for two episodes, or it could be the entire season takes place. I feel like I'm like, this is like a big confession. I am like a little bit cooler on The Good Place than 99.9% of people are, or at least people on my Twitter feed are.
Yeah.
I think I would kind of prefer the let's stick with the same sort of timeline or same setup longer, because I feel like sometimes the show, as much as I can appreciate on an intellectual level all of its amazing, you know, reversals and reveals, it can make me feel a little bit emotionally detached from it. And I feel like a season that really gets into the emotional arc without all that could be a really interesting switch for the show to make.
Yeah, I will say that sometimes I'm worried about The Good Place's willingness to change the status quo so often, because I'm always a fan of like stretching, like not stretching a premise out, but like exploring all the possibilities of a premise. I think we're in a similar position now as we were at the end of season one. It's like, where could they possibly go from here? And I mean, season two didn't disappoint, but now we're at that point again. It's like, where else could they go in season three?
Before we move on and I hate it when people say spoiler alert, but I guess so you know, we have our second episode is Good Place focused, so we don't need to take that much time here. But before we leave Good Place season two behind, do you have a favorite episode, a favorite moment, a favorite anything, or anything that like really bugged you from season two?
I'm not a huge fan of the Chidi Eleanor romantic relationship, personally. It's not an element of the show. I love their friendship. I'm not against the idea in theory of them being a couple, but I feel like the show did not sell me on those like will they, won't they feels that I want to get from a show at its best. So maybe again, like season three, we've got a clean slate and the show could more than build up to that. But that was the one element of season two that I think I had the hardest time connecting to.
You know, I think that's fair because I was so interested in Eleanor has these feelings and maybe partially has these feelings because she's seen this tape, rather than anything they're actually experiencing, but they're not feelings that are reciprocated because it's a different version of their reality or whatever. So while I really liked the hot diggity dog moment, I wasn't quite as excited about it as the rest of the internet seemed to be.
I would say that moment actually fell a little bit flat for me as a moment of humor, I suppose.
It was a good kiss, though.
It was a good kiss, though, and I got it from a writing perspective, but the way the actors read it, it kind of felt like they weren't 100% into the joke. I don't know what it was. It was just like there was a timing thing.
You know what Hot Diggity Dog was perfect? Ted Danson's.
Oh, yeah.
But when is Ted Danson not perfect?
When he's doing blackface.
Do you remember that?
No.
Hold on.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just
back in the
drop
day.
Drop that in here.
When he was with Whoopi Goldberg and he did that, like, I can't remember if it was a press junket, like, funny, like, roast of somebody or something, but he came out in blackface.
Oh, no. Ah.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a different time, and he apologized profusely for it, obviously, and that doesn't take away from his talent, but that would be a time when he wasn't perfect.
Okay. Yes. Yeah, fair, mm-hmm. fair call
yeah,
out.
Yeah, yeah,
call.
Yeah, yeah, yeah right. I still haven't forgiven him just for Gulliver's Travels.
Oh, God. What about our personal favorites?
Sure.
Oh, my sorry. Favorite moment of Good Place Season 2 so far, it's very specific. It is the fact that Derek has wind chimes for genitals. That was my favorite.
God, well, and the return of that bit.
Yeah, when they have the walkie-talkie and they're listening to them do it, you can hear the wind chimes in the background. That made me laugh a lot. So that
Derek.
Was my favorite.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, excellent. What about you, Clint? What was yours?
It might have been the moment where Ted Danson realizes the full weight of existentialism, I think. Oh. And he just, like, his jaw drops and he just, like, loses himself. And is like, for hours, I think hours or days at a time or something like that. I can't remember how long. It's been forever. But I remember that moment being like, okay, this is Ted Danson's episode. Let's just let him run with it.
I'm very partial to the Janet episode, just like the coins and the hero and all of the Lordy Lordy look who's 40, all of that stuff. But I think my actual favorite moment is in Dance Dance Resolution when Jason figures it out and Michael goes, Jason figured out this one hurts. This one really hurts. It just made me laugh so hard. I'm such a Jason Mendoza fan. I was talking today about what a great, great moment it is in season one when he comes like running out of the shadows and it's like, dude, what? I don't think I'm supposed to be here. And you're like, I don't even know what's happening. It's so
one
good.
One time when I was 7, I got one right on the button.
So now assuming that like The Good Place is a thing that happened and we had feelings about it. What was your favorite thing that you watched on TV this week?
Netflix just released their new series, Altered Carbon, which is based on a book that I have read, and I'm a huge, giant nerd for cyberpunk stuff especially. So it's, you know, anything like Blade Runner or Blade Runner derived, I'll watch it. And I'm about 3 episodes in, and I'm enjoying it so far. It's not great. It has that inherent problem that cyberpunk properties have in that it feels sort of stuck in a 90s version of what the future is going to be like. But that being said, I'm really enjoying it. Surprisingly, one of the better characters is, because it takes place hundreds of years in the future in this world where you can continually download your consciousness into new bodies. And actually, if you go to Consequence of Sound, I got to interview a for reals neuroscientist about this. It was very exciting. But there's also other things like hotels that are just autonomous things run by artificial intelligence. The seedy gothic hotel themed motel that he goes into and like stays in for a while is run by this AI version of Edgar Allan Poe. And I don't know the actor who plays him, but he himself, he has a very wonderful performance. It's kind of like if Paul F. Tompkins gave a serious dramatic performance. It's fantastic because he gets to have his own sort of subplots where he commiserates with other AIs. His reason for having people in his hotel is to study the human condition and all that stuff. So it's a weird little like side plot that is a little bit spicier than the cyberpunk neo-noir thing that's happening. But I mean, I'm really enjoying it. It's a beautiful looking show. Everyone else is good. There's still the inherent sort of whitewashing problem just baked into the premise where it's like, oh, it's an Asian character, but he re-sleeves into a white guy's skin that I get on a conceptual level, but in a practical sense is still a little bit, I'm still willing to stick with it. I'm having fun with it. Yeah, it's a good, fun show.
I finished Grace and Frankie season 4 last week. I love that show so much.
Same.
It's really good. I can't get enough Lily Tomlin and Jane Fonda in my life. And this season in particular was really interesting to me because they are not, in fact, they are leaning into the terrifying nature of growing old and not being able to take care of yourself anymore. Yeah. You think it's going to be funny because it's Jane Fonda and Lily Tomlin, but really when you think about it, it's not fucking funny at all.
Yeah.
And there was an episode that hit me so hard that I couldn't watch it for 2 days afterwards, which was when the plumbers came in and they came back and they had taken all the copper pipe out of their home.
Yeah, I remember that one.
I'm looking forward to it.
I'm caught up with it, Julia.
It was so shocking. I love them. And their reactions to it and then what happens with their kids afterwards is very interesting. And
I'll ask you a question. How do you feel about the direction that Sam Waterston and Martin Sheen's characters are going to take in the next season?
Another thing that is very interesting to me because it's clear that Frankie and Grace's characters are kind of succumbing to old age and the, you know, myriad problems that come along with that about living independently and what you do. And then all of a sudden, the old gay dudes are getting their groove back.
I guess.
It's a little, it feels weird. Like, why do they get to have all the fun and all the new discovery and stuff where Grace and Frankie are being put in a home?
Yeah.
Like, it's strange. But I understand it. It's just, feels a little like, they're giving the heavy lifting to Lily Tomlin and Jane Fonda.
And I'm always a fan of giving Sam Waterston and Martin Sheen work, but sometimes I do feel like their characters get in the way of Grace and Frankie.
Sometimes I want less of them a little bit, and sometimes I, in fact, definitely want less of the kids.
Yeah.
Specifically Coyote.
Yeah.
And Ethan Embry and Brooklyn Decker. They're in the same plot line, right? I don't really need that plot line as much.
Did you know that Martin Sheen and Sam Waterston get paid the same amount as Lily Tomlin and Jane Fonda?
They should not.
Mm-hmm. I know. I was just listening to a separate podcast recommendation. Happy, Sad, Confused did a great interview with Lily and Jane. And during it, they talked about this. And Lily was like, I think we should get paid more. We're Grace and Frankie.
Shit.
Yeah.
Yes. I mean, I guess small miracles, they're not getting paid more. But
yeah,
still.
They're not getting paid. Right. Yeah, at least Lily and Jane are getting paid less than them.
Right.
That just made my stomach hurt.
Yeah, I know.
I'm sorry.
But I love that show. And my husband, Neil, sent me a message the day that it was released, and I responded with and then we binged it in 3 or 4
That's I think the single highest pitch sound I've ever heard you make.
Yeah, I was very excited. I really liked that show.
It's really and good.
I think season 4 has flown under the radar for people. Mm-hmm. So for those who haven't checked it out, it sounded they just kind of dropped it, but it's great. I feel like I wasn't expecting it to come back.
Same. I was iffy on first season, but then by
the
second
first
season
was the worst, I think.
Yeah, they found their groove. Yeah. They got their groove back. Yeah.
You know, the Netflix promotional machine seems to have a little hitch in its giddy up.
Because it's too much stuff at a time.
Yeah. I mean, One Day at a Time had a pretty great rollout. There's this documentary series they released last week called Dirty Money. That's pretty great. That I haven't seen anything about.
I saw one trailer once.
I haven't seen that much promo stuff for Altered Carbon. I mean, some, but not a ton.
Do you think that Netflix just doesn't give a fuck? Because they know that you're staring at it for hours and you can just scroll through and they don't really have to spend as much money on advertising because they have your eyeballs anyway.
All they have to do is they'll just plant it in the because you watched thing.
Yeah.
Even if
check this
related
out.
Or not, you know.
They'll just keep saying don't worry, there's another season of Stranger Things coming.
Yeah. Right.
Carolyn, you had one. Did you
have
one?
Yes, I do. Yeah. So Grey's Anatomy is a show that is still on TV. It's in season 14.
Continually.
People are
surprising.
Always shocked, to discover this. So I would say Grey's is a show that goes through strong periods and then weak periods. This season, especially since it came back for its midseason premiere, has been excellent. And in particular, I want to recommend the episode Personal Jesus, which is an episode that is mainly told through the point of view of this one character, April, who is a devout Christian. And it's an episode all about her coming to question her faith because of all of these various storylines that happen in the hospital in that episode. And it could be something that would be super trite and terrible, but I think this episode is executed so well. There's one plot line that's dealing with domestic abuse. There's a character who was in an abusive relationship, and she's sort of dealing with this guy that's come back into her life. It's also an episode that tackles police brutality. There's a 12-year-old black kid that comes in was trying to get into his own house, and he didn't have a key, and he was crawling through the window, and he gets shot by the cops. And it's one of those things where you think, oh, no, this is a story centered on a white woman that's going to try to tackle police brutality. That doesn't sound good, but it totally eschews that because it just has all of the black characters on the show, of which there are many, all bring their perspectives to it. So it's actually mostly told through their point of view, including this really heart-wrenching scene where Miranda Bailey, who's been on the show from the beginning, has to sit down with her own 12-year-old son and sort of talk him through, you know, if he has to interact with a cop, and explicitly saying, you know, your white friends don't have to do this and this is what you have to do. And it reflects and it influences the white woman that's central to it, but it's very much told through a black perspective. And from a character point of view, from a sort of social messaging point of view, I think that episode and also just this season in general is being very intentional and straightforward about the social issues it wants to tackle. The most recent episode was about how women often don't get this equal medical treatment as men because their symptoms are written off as being them being emotional or them being too tired or whatever.
It's all in your head.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so it's tackling these things very straight on, but it's also doing it in a way that feels very, very true to the characters. So if you want to check in on a show you may have watched full on 10 years ago,
right?
Now's a good time to be doing it.
Yeah, I think the only time I watched was when my roommate in college at the time, it was when it first started, and he was like, I'm going to be a med student, so I'm going to watch Grey's Anatomy to get my education.
Because that's exactly what
it's cheaper
like.
Than med school.
Yeah.
So.
I for sure quit watching Grey's Anatomy before I moved to Chicago, where I have lived for almost 10 years.
Yeah.
But
definitely.
I have occasionally like popped back in, especially if something Looney Tunes was going on. Like, just as I wanted you to explain the nuttier parts of This Is Us to Julie, I just always constantly want to hear about the truly insane things. And I've been thinking a lot about Grace this week because I was trying to think what
Welcome
my favorite
my life, thinking about Grace all the time.
My favorite Super Bowl episode of all time was, and that episode,
it's incredible.
Where there's the bomb and the guy.
Yes, the Kyle Chandler.
Oh my God, Kyle Chandler. Yes.
Yes. We all know that one.
Yeah, everybody
it's a classic
does.
Moment of television.
The one that I was recommending, Personal Jesus, it opens on a shower scene that is very reminiscent of the shower scene in that episode.
That's
so you're
great.
Getting called. And the most recent episode, they literally like, they're doing these montages flashing back to like George and Derek and all these characters who have
George.
Been off the show. And you're like, that's when it hits you. You're like, oh, I watched him 10 years ago, and now you're calling back emotions that are tied to my real life, and it is very good.
Nice.
Every time I think about a big moment on TV, in my head, what plays is, what you say? For whatever reason. So I was just picturing Ellen Pompeo running down the hall away from the bomb, and it was like, what you say?
What's yours?
Oh, gosh. Yeah. I'm having kind of a hard time because I just assumed that one of these two lovely women was going to pick Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, so I didn't have to.
No, yeah.
But you know what? I'll save that for something else because also it's not like people need to hear me say more about Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. I'm going to go with last night's episode of Great we're recording on a Saturday, so last week's episode of Great Performances on PBS, which was Nas doing Illmatic with the National Symphony Orchestra. Oh, yeah. And my partner and I recently got like a bargain basement sound bar with like the speakers that go behind you and all that stuff. Wow. And I was just like sitting in my living room listening to this album I haven't listened to in God probably since the last time I watched Grey's Anatomy and hearing this like incredible orchestration. It was just
it's like lush.
It was it was like a very rich cultural experience, and it's shot so I don't know who directed it. I could look it up, but I won't because I'm gesturing with my hands. And it's you're seeing him hear it for the first time because they keep going to rehearsal footage.
Oh, God.
And he's talking about,
I'm totally
going
to watch this when I go home.
God, it's so good. Yeah. He's talking about like what it's like for him as a kid who grew up in Queens to be sitting in this beautiful theater listening to a bunch of white people play his music on string instruments. Mm-hmm. And it's like, it's just incredible. And he's so good. I cannot recommend it highly enough. I didn't know it was coming. A friend mentioned it to me and I was like, I should tune in. I always DVR Great Performances because I'm an old lady. Mm. And I've got a bunch of them saved on my DVR because I don't have time. So I've got like Indecent waiting for me. I've got She Loves Me with Laura Benanti and Jane Krakowski waiting for me.
It's very good.
Right? I've got somewhere I've got Imelda Staunton doing Gypsy. And I think I also have Imelda Staunton doing something. I love Imelda Staunton.
It's just the Imelda Staunton collection.
Yeah. Yeah, I couldn't recommend it more.
Yeah, I watched it on your recommendation like literally earlier today, and it was fantastic. Oh, yeah,
I want to listen to it right now.
Yeah,
the like I want you all to shut up and go away so I could just listen to these people. Oh, it really was. And there's this very charming interview with the conductor where he's like, I was really nervous about this because like I don't do hip hop, like I don't do, but I think it's going pretty well. And you see him conducting and he's like hitting the downbeats, but it's like as I'm gesturing too wildly and my boobs are hitting the microphone. But
there you
like,
go, podcasting.
Like, and it's so like, he's conducting it beautifully, but it's, I just love it.
And there's that one bit in rehearsal where like there's one engineer, this like old, sort of like this middle-aged mom type who's just like, oh, and then one of my favorite lyrics is life's a bitch and then you die. And like, it's so cute. If you look hard enough, you can find the whole thing for free on YouTube.
So we have a bunch of little rotating segments we're going to do, and we're going to dive into one of them right now.
Yeah, we're going to do Last Week, This Week, because there's a thriving, vibrant, late-night world happening all around us, especially in the political times we're in now. So it's nice to focus in on one of those titans of industry. We're going to focus on Sam B this time around, because I love the sort of triumvirate of Seth Meyers, Sam B, and John Oliver, because I feel like they all contribute different angles to this sort of, it's kind of like, you know, the media wing of the resistance, I suppose.
Yeah, honestly, I feel like you can throw Colbert and Kimmel and Conan, like, God, that was a lot of C sounds,
yeah,
in there too.
Yeah.
Basically, it's like just Jimmy Fallon is just doing
what
his
about
thing.
Did you also watch The Daily Show? What about, how's Trevor Noah doing?
He's doing okay.
He's doing okay.
He's doing okay.
Yeah.
Because I actually absorb it through their YouTube content. Because
yeah,
that's another thing. Late Show has this unprecedented transparency when it comes to it. Like, Full Frontal just puts all of their shows divided by acts on YouTube the following morning. And that's how I consume them. And so that's where I found one segment from the most recent one, which is our pick for last week, this week. It's like the third act of her most recent show. Sam B basically does a story slash comedy sketch about the sort of the farm where they put all the government employees who have quit in the wake of the Trump administration because they cannot abide the policies that they can't stand by the policies of the administration. It's this farm and they have like all these actors in suits just like running around grazing on grass.
Literally acting like, getting tipped over like they're a cow. Yeah. Yeah.
They launch into this wonderful interview segment with, I forget her name, but she used to be a State Department employee, and just talking about the principles by which she wanted to, you know, live and work in the State Department. That's why she had to leave, and the effects that not filling these positions would have. And it was a really fascinating interview, punctuated by one of my very favorite things. There's a guy named Charlie Brotman who has announced every inauguration since Eisenhower, I think. He didn't get to announce Trump's because Trump fired him. This sweet old man. And so, like, he is on the farm. And to give him something to do, you know, the premise is Sam B gets to like have him narrate the interviews, but he keeps reading her questions for her, and it becomes this escalating comedic bit of like unplugging his microphone, him doing a rolled up piece
the
of paper.
The best.
For someone who's just like this doddering old man who just announces, he has wonderful comedic timing.
Yeah.
And it was just so cute and so adorable, and it was such a great way to lighten up a segment that, if they hadn't done all these comedic trappings, would be really existentially terrifying. The idea that we're losing more employees than we're taking in for the government because mm-hmm. there's a hiring freeze. And without the State Department, we're just going to be this militaristic wing. You know, that's how we're going to relate to the world in terms of like an us versus them isolationism.
What was the line? Become the Howard Hughes,
Hughes of countries.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. Yeah. Yeah.
Just saving our urine and growing our fingernails.
I had two things that really struck me about this. And I also thought it was great, but did not find it like cuddly at all. Because I appreciate that she puts all of her stuff online so I can just skip anything that actually has the president speaking in it.
Yeah.
And that's one of them. Julie, when we shared a lift over here, was like, oh, I have to watch that Full Frontal segment. I haven't done it yet. She was like, just do yourself a favor and skip like the first 3 minutes. And then the clip that we had actually excluded the actual parts
of the
state. Yeah,
Neil and I watched the full episode online, and I was just laying on the couch like,
it's tough.
I just can't. But the other thing that I really appreciate about it is not my point with Julie, so I'm going to let her make it about the like style of comedy.
Oh, so while we were watching it, Neil and I were laughing our asses off, and I was like, you know what this reminds me of? And Neil was like, what? And I said, do you remember when she was on The Daily Show and they gave her like 8 minutes to do the performance art piece, like I watched The Five. Where it's her in like a black turtleneck and there's a black background and she just does all these things like red lights on her, screaming, laying on the floor, and then it comes back to John. And it was so well received that they gave her another 8 minutes like 4 months later for I Watch Morning Joe. And it's the same thing. If you haven't watched those clips, they're available online. You have to watch them on The Daily Show site. Mm-hmm. But if you search for Samantha Bee, I Watch The Five, or Samantha Bee, I Watch Morning Joe, you're welcome.
It's so the absurdity is much higher than her Full Frontal stuff had been. And I sort of forgot that that's such a key part of her comedy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And until you brought it up, I was like, oh, yeah, it's like it's not totally weird for her to be doing a thing where a guy is then chewing on her hair and she's swatting him away.
Yeah.
Like, it's not completely.
My favorite line that I think bears repeating is, so there's more employees. Do you think I'm going to need to buy more land or step up this sausage making operation?
Yeah, it's pretty.
I'm like, Samantha Bean, I love you. Keep doing the hard work. Keep watching. Keep watching all that shit I don't want to watch.
Right. Well, I think that's the valuable thing for her. Like, that's the thing she brings to the table, is I feel like she channels just our sheer anger at what is going on, especially in her normal segments. Like, she's the one who gets to just shout at the top of her lungs, like, do the Howard Beale thing. She gets to be the Howard Beale of all the, because, you know, Seth Meyers and John Oliver, like, they feel an obligation to, like, calmly and, you know, like the Sarah Silverman show, like that safe, secure white guy to let you know that everything's going to be okay. They're the guy at the desk. She eschews the desk and is just expressing for us that cathartic anger we need to feel.
I was really glad you sent this clip along because I am very removed from all this late night stuff. I never watch it unless something goes super viral. And even then, I don't know, it's not really a genre I gravitate towards a lot, but I was so impressed with the way the comedy and the information was blended together. And it really, I mean, you were saying this, Allison, but it really does feel like, okay, here's your little spoonful of sugar to make medicine go down, because that is, I mean, it wasn't a dry interview exactly, but it is just like a lot of serious information that is important to know. And I'm glad I watched it for that reason. But also the humor of these people just acting like animals was legit so funny. If that had been the whole segment, I would have felt satisfied. And the way that those two things were blended, I was super impressed. This actually made me want, and I obviously everyone loves, you know, Sambi. I've like heard this all the time, but this more than anything made me want to check out the show more regularly.
Yeah, yeah.
I love when she does stuff that's righteous fury. I really do. But this weird piece of like pastoral absurdity.
Yeah.
You know, I was trying to picture it on the way over here. I was trying to picture it if she had done it with like Greyhound rescue dogs instead, and all the actors were in like really sleek suits and had like those nice little blankets over them and were just being calmly walked around the neighborhood instead. You know what I mean?
I feel like she's doing more conceptual stuff like that recently. Like the apology race is another segment, I think, from that same show where she has her correspondents go on a two-week tour around the world to populations affected by Trump's remarks and like literally just running around the streets saying lo siento por Trump.
I think cool. Well, hey, Sam B wins the week in late night. This is the part where we take a break
and then we come back for more TV talk.
Yeah, and there's like maybe there's an ad and maybe instead we'll just play Yakety Sex for 15 seconds.
Back for more TV party.
I'm really good at podcasting. So nice. our next segment is one we're going to do every week. And it's basically just an excuse to talk about one overly specific thing we really liked. So this is overly specific thing of the week, where we get to pick something that's specific, perhaps overly so, and discuss it, not ad nauseum, because who wants to listen to that?
Yeah.
Julie, what is your overly specific thing of the week?
It was episode 2 of season 3 of RuPaul's Drag Race All Stars. It was the challenge, which was divas, RuPaul's divas. So each queen was assigned a diva, like Mariah Carey or Celine Dion. But one of the all-stars this season is very close to my heart, and that's Miss Chi-Chi Devane. And she is a country queen from Louisiana, but she's got charm to spare. And she was given Patti LaBelle. And she, my very specific moment, is when she came out onto the runway to sing the little segment of the song that was dedicated to, like, it was the Patti LaBelle section. And she had kind of weirdly fashioned this hat to look like Patti LaBelle's weird structural hair back in the 80s, I think. Mm-hmm. But the best part of it is she was the one out of everyone, I think, who really devoted themselves to their particular diva's physicality. There was a lot of flailing hands. There was a lot, like, she took her shoes off. There was a lot of, like, rolling around on the floor. And like, RuPaul and the judges, one of the judges was Vanessa Williams this week. They were into it. And I was just happy to see Chi-Chi Devane have a good moment, because in the first episode, she fell a little short.
Those jazz shoes were such a bad choice.
It was a bad idea, but you know what? Patti LaBelle brought me back. She did not win, but she was safe this time, which means she gets to come back and do it again.
One of my favorite things on any drag race is when they pick somebody to be either top or bottom, but you can't tell which one it is. Mm-hmm. Like, she was ostensibly picked to be in the bottom, but then they basically just praised her the whole time. Like, it's always because you can tell that those are the ones that are really interesting, because they're like, man, you were a mess and I loved it. And like, that's just the best. They're so interesting. By the way, you said she's a Louisiana queen, Southern queen, but she's got charm to spare. And I think what you meant was she's a Louisiana queen, and
she's got charms.
Yes,
both. With charms, baby.
I really, both. I'm a big Chi-Chi fan too.
Yes, mm-hmm. Yes.
She was not my favorite of the episode, but she was real, real good.
Nice, nice.
Caroline, you got one?
So I feel like I failed at making mine super specific or super original, but Julie already highlighted how great Grace and Frankie is, and I just specifically want to highlight Lily Tomlin as Frankie, who I think is yes. one of the best comedic characters mm-hmm. of all time. I like could not overemphasize, and Jane Fonda is wonderful too, and Grace is a great character, but Frankie is like nothing I have ever seen before. Mm-hmm. A lot of that maybe comes down to the wig, which I will single out as being a really fantastic piece of character building. Mm-hmm. But I just think that the stuff, the joy with which Lily Tomlin just sort of whatever the scene is, she just chooses to deliver all the lines with this oddball joy, even if it's a kind of serious scene. And I find that such an interesting and compelling choice. Mm-hmm. And so for that performance alone, dig into Grace and Frankie. Like that mm-hmm. alone. And that everything else the show is doing is great. But Lily Tomlin specifically.
Agreed.
Big old hero of mine.
Clint, do you have one?
Yes, I do. I have a guac joke of the week. Because if you watch The Good Place and I think another NBC sitcom, Superstore, mm-hmm. they both aired new episodes on the same night. And both episodes had a joke about guacamole, which I thought was strangely like fitting. I don't know. Maybe that's too specific. But no, because Good Place, you know, she comes out. I was like, oh, hey, if I put out guac, would anyone eat it?
And then, it's homemade.
Right, right. And then I don't know who else is following Superstore here, but Dina, the assistant manager, like she agrees to like be like the surrogate for Mark McKinney's character's baby. There's the implantation, but she has to relax, but she's such a type A that she would like, you know, she wants to go around the store anyway, but Mark McKinney forces her to relax, and eventually like just a switch goes off and she's just in full relaxation mode, just like laying on couches for days in the store. And at some point, you know, she's like, oh, I don't want to put you out, but could I get some guac? Actually, you know, I would love some guac right now, but actually, could I get guac, salsa and bean dip, but layer them in a glass bowl? That would be great. They're like small, like not particularly funny jokes, but I just enjoyed the probably unintentional synchronicity between the two.
I bet you a nickel there was a guac joke in Will and Grace too.
Probably.
Oh, but I was going to say, it sounds that? Like Big Guac has their hand in.
Yeah.
NBC big, over here
big
is
avocado.
What I'm seeing. Yeah.
Yeah. Committed to making us all too poor to buy houses.
It's like that episode of 30 Rock where they spend like 4 minutes talking about Snapple. And then yeah. Tina Fey turns to the camera and goes, can we have our money now?
Yes.
Big Guac. Yeah, that's excellent. I'm just gonna like, I can't just ignore it. My overly specific thing is the unexpected 11 o'clock number at the start of an episode of a week, which is in this week's episode of Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, which is Nathaniel and I Are Just Friends, with the return of an exclamation point, begins with this incredible, maybe this time, send up by Dr. Copian, one of my favorite recurring characters on the show, played by Michael Hyatt, one of my favorite TV actors.
She's fantastic.
And she sings the holy crap out of that song. And the second it started, I was like, this is the best thing that has ever happened to me. She was in that glittery dress. Mm-hmm, Donald mm-hmm. Champlin put some photos on Twitter that she took from backstage while she was singing it. And I just wanted to be there, like standing, listening to her sing the song. Two separate people, both Aline Brosh McKenna and Rachel Bloom, tweeted out that they were all trying to work while she was recording the vocal for that in their office and whatever like recording booth they have at the Crazy Ex-Girlfriend offices, and nobody could work because they were all too distracted by how amazing she sounded. It really is great, and it's so funny. Yeah. The lyric requisite therapy shawl made me laugh so hard. And it's this incredible setup to then this really gorgeous reprise at the end of the episode. It knocked me on my ass. Mm-hmm. It's sometimes Crazy Ex-Girlfriend is great because of the music. Sometimes it's great because of the story. Sometimes it's great because of both. But this was like, if any show had started with a Maybe This Time song sung by a drained, extremely frustrated psychiatrist, it would just, like, it was just heaven. Heaven is a place on earth, and it's that song. God, I loved it so much. Is there anything in the next week that's coming up you're super excited about? An episode that's been teased? A series that's coming back?
I'll just start with the consensus vote. Star Trek Discovery is, I think by the time this airs, the next episode will be the season finale. Discovery has had a really rocky first season, especially because it's bifurcated into basically two chapters, right? Like where we are on the show right now, they just spent a long time in the Mirror Universe, which is just this crazy opportunity for everyone to be over the top and arch and comical. But they've finally just gotten back to the Prime Universe, and all kinds of shenanigans are going on, and they have to wrap up this season quick. They have like just 2 weeks left to figure everything out. We just lost Jason Isaacs.
Well, really?
Oh, sorry, spoilers.
Lucius Malfoy.
It turns out he was from the Mirror Universe all along.
Womp womp.
Womp womp womp. So, you know, forget that nuanced exploration of, like, whether a militaristic person in Starfleet could work. No, it just turns out he's a mustache-twirling bad guy from another dimension. Yeah, I'm just really interested to see where they're going to end up with this, because I kind of enjoyed the sort of chapter-by-chapter nature of it, where it was just a series of small arcs throughout the season, where it's like, oh, here's several episodes we'll dedicate to this scenario, and now we'll spend 4 or 5 episodes in the Mirror Universe, and now we only have 2 episodes left to wrap this thing up, and, you know, they've been renewed, so I don't know if they're going to follow Brian Fuller's original plan, where it's going to be like an anthology show, where like his original plan, every new season was going to be a new ship, new crew, new time period. But I think since he's moved on and there are other showrunners, we're going to stay with the Discovery crew. But I'm really excited to see how it turns out. Who knows?
God, Brian Fuller, he's moving around a lot.
What happened? So he's done for Discovery and he's done for American Gods, right?
Yeah.
You said that. So what's he doing?
I think he's just knitting somewhere.
Oh, no.
He's welcome to our new segment. Where's Brian Fuller now?
Yeah.
What is he doing?
Where in the world is...
No, he's got a zillion projects. I feel like I've seen several things that are in development from him just in the last couple days.
Good, because
his dance card is very full.
I've loved him since the Push and Daisy days.
Oh, yeah. God.
Mm-hmm. And weirdly enough, I think Discovery's improved, because he left early on in Discovery's development, like really early on. And so I think the first half of the first season was sort of his vision. Mm-hmm. For, like, the ways he was going to shake up the Star Trek universe or whatever. And that's where all, like, the weird Klingons and the overly dark tone have come in. So it feels like the Mirror Universe stuff on is, like, whoever's running the show now. And is sort of riding the ship. And I feel like they're doing a lot of almost probably retconning of,
like a soft reboot.
Essentially, yeah. Mm-hmm. So I'm curious to see what they'll do in a season 2 where, you know, they have control of everything from the beginning. That's the consensus pick that only I know about, I suppose.
We should just call that one your pick and skip a consensus pick.
I suppose. But I mean, because I also wanted to talk briefly about Black-ish coming back.
Cool. So you get two. Do it.
Sorry.
It's your podcast.
I know. Well, I feel like as the one man on this podcast, I've already taken up too much room.
Well, it's okay because you're getting paid twice as much as we are.
It's true. Yeah, yeah. You're getting 73 cents on the podcast dollar. I'll just say real quick that Black-ish is coming back and I'm really excited because it's also the first time it's been back since Grown-ish launched, I think. And that's another one I've really been enjoying. I feel like it's found its feet really quickly and Yara Shahidi is fantastic. It's turning into much more of a drama than Black-ish is, but Black-ish has just long been one of my favorite sitcoms running right now, and I'm just excited for it to come back. I want to see more Jennifer Lewis. I need more Jennifer Lewis in my life.
Always, in everything. Yeah. Did you guys see Tracee Ellis Ross is directing an episode?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
It's been a trend lately to have, I think it's always been a trend to have, I know Star Trek used to do this all the time, have the actors direct, but it feels like it's become a current popular
Gina Rodriguez
thing to do.
Did one.
Yeah. Ellen Pompeo did a Grey's.
Kerry Washington did Last Night Scandal.
Is Ms. Ross going to get as much money as Mr. Anderson?
She was on the most recent episode of Grown-ish, too, because that's another thing about Grown-ish is the occasional Black-ish cameos.
Drop in.
Cool. Yeah.
I've only seen the first episode of Grown-ish so far. I have to go back and catch up, but God, I love her. Julie, do you have something you're looking forward to?
Last week, I received the WTTW circular in the mail, like the old person that I am, which is where I found out about the Nas thing, and Neil and I put it on our calendar like old people. But then I specifically put for next Saturday, as we're recording this on Saturday the 3rd, so this will be Saturday the 10th. I think it's American Masters. I'm not sure. Or it's American Experience. I can't remember the program title.
One of those.
But American Ninja Warrior.
Yeah, and it's Maya Angelou, and I will be watching it from beginning to end live, so I'm very excited about
with a tear-streaked face.
Oh, yeah. I will just start sobbing the moment she comes on screen. I can't stop.
You just saying Maya Angelou inspired a collective gasp.
Yeah, everybody was like, yay! Anyway, next Saturday night, y'all, tune in to WTTW.
It's gonna be lit.
It will be.
It's going to be fire emoji, fire emoji, fire emoji.
Totally. Caroline, what about you?
So I feel like I've spent half this podcast talking about This Is Us, but I am excited to see what's going to happen in the Super Bowl episode. And then particularly, so they're normally they air on Tuesdays. They're having one this Sunday, and then they're having one again on Tuesday. So we're getting like a twofer. And I'm particularly curious because this mystery of how did Jack die has really fueled the show for 2 seasons. Once it's presumably revealed in the Super Bowl episode, I'm curious what the next episode is going to look like. Like, how does the show reset? Do they try to get a new mystery in that in its place, or do they just sort of go forward? So I'm curious to see the sort of new era of the show.
Mm-hmm. I think he's just going to turn out to be alive this whole time.
I mean, it could be.
Yeah.
That would be, if the Super Bowl episode ends with Milo in old age makeup, just like knocking on the door, that would be something.
I love it. I love it.
Did you see the shit about, of course you did. I want to hear about this from you real quick because it's not a topic and I do not care. Yeah. This shit about the Bachelor contestant who was on the California missing persons list.
Becca
no
M.
way.
Question mark?
Yeah. So the gist of it is that there was a special on television or in the paper or something about the missing persons list in California. And somebody was like, that looks like Becca M. from The Bachelor. And they called the police and were like, I think that person's on The Bachelor. And they were. And it was someone who was on The Bachelor. Her mother reported her missing. And she was on The Bachelor and she was on the missing person.
But I think the timeline of it was that after the show had finished filming, that was when the mom reported her missing. Like there was something where she had, I think also marijuana was involved.
She went
somehow
to work on a weed farm.
Oh yeah, like but then do. Also she like was she had been updating her social media at the time, so people were like, totally fair to the mom to be concerned about her daughter.
Of
in
course,
any right. case,
of
yes.
you know,
but
I hope someone
that
cares
the,
about me enough to put me on a yes. missing persons list if for not posting on Facebook for a couple yeah. days.
I do not follow The Bachelor at all, but the first of all,
she's
it's just
the young one, the 22-year-old dating the 36-year-old. Also, none of the contestants are under 30 anymore. He cut all of those within the first like.
Oh,
2 weeks.
That's an interesting Bachelor.
Oh, he sounds like a treat.
He's a dream.
Yeah. Hello, Mr. Robinson.
So what am I going to pick? Oh, you know what? I'm going to pick the next episode of American Crime Story. God, Darren Criss is so good on this show.
So
yeah, I still
good.
Need to start this season. I still
God,
need to start
it's
it.
Insane how it was like he was born to play this and no one knew except for Ryan Murphy. And it's like, yeah, this is what Darren Criss was put on this earth to do.
It's like he was watching him sing Teenage Dream on Glee and was like, you know what? Someday. Andrew Cunanan, and we're making it happen.
I feel like that sentence is generally true, though. No one else knew but Ryan Murphy.
Yeah.
He's got an eye, man. Whatever else you may say about Ryan Murphy, and I could say a lot of things. He knows talent for sure. The next episode that's coming up, the chronology is really interesting. They're sort of going backwards through his killing spree, which
starting
like,
with Versace,
yeah,
and then
starting with Versace,
the
and then they're also
beforehand.
Okay.
But they're also going backwards through Versace's life, and it's there. Are lots of great performances. Very interesting.
Who plays Donatella?
Penelope Cruz.
Stop it.
And she
doing,
looks
doing
great.
A performance. I don't know if it's good. I don't know if it's bad, but it is a performance.
And it's committed.
Nice.
Yeah.
Very
but
committed.
She, you wouldn't think that she could look anything like Donatella. And she doesn't, but she looks enough not like Penelope Cruz that it's easy to forget.
Okay.
Like, she's really good.
And Ricky Martin is surprisingly a great actor on
very
it.
Very good. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Ricky Martin doing a really nice job. Edgar Ramirez doing a really nice job as Versace. But Darren Criss is like the one. Mm-hmm. Oh, and there's a terrific episode which aired this week, which if... I don't know, if I hadn't been too busy talking about Crazy Ex-Girlfriend One Day at a Time and all the other things we talked about, maybe I would have talked about this. But
so
it's,
much TV.
It's the Judith Light episode.
Oh, yeah. I saw
good
the photos.
God. She's so good in it. Anyway, this next episode is not quite a two-hander, but is almost a two-hander between Darren Criss and a relative newcomer named Cody Fearn, who is just terrific. It's a really, really good episode. So I am...
So it's between two ferns?
Oh, no. God.
Wow.
Nailed it.
You're fired.
Stop the podcast right now. That's
right.
We'll never be repeated.
Goodbye.
It's not a perfect season of television and there are some hiccups, but God, it's a really good episode. So I think I'm going to pick that. We've got one more really important thing to do.
We do.
Which is to highlight the best title of a Discovery show.
Yes.
Documentary.
In prepping for this podcast and trying to figure out segments, and I started going through lineups. This doesn't apply to this week, but last week, Discovery Channel had something on called Tesla's Death Ray. And so I realized quickly that Discovery Channel has all these kinds of crazy titles all the time. So yeah, as often as we can, we're going to highlight something really crazy. And the one I found is a show called Killing Fields, Murder Isle, The Hunting Grounds. The Hunting Grounds is the title of the episode, but Murder Isle is the third season of the show called Killing Fields. And I guess it's like a true crime documentary thing, season-long exploration of like a murder. And the best I can discern about this particular season is it's just about this murder in the Isle of Wight in Virginia. I didn't really look up much more than that because all you need to know is it's a show called Killing Fields, Murder Isle.
I don't need any true crime anything.
Me neither. Like, thank you.
I will watch the hell out of American Crime Story because I can't resist a good actor, especially if he previously played Blaine on Glee. Like, I just can't. Or if she's named Judith Light. Like, I just can't resist those things, but I just, the world is too dark. That is why I am currently watching the first season of One Day at a Time for the second time this month.
Wow.
So, no, that's not true. It's February. So for the second time in 2 months.
Mm-hmm. I really have felt that in my life over the last year. I don't want to watch upsetting things. I don't want to watch things about crime. I just don't. Mm-hmm. I need something that is going to like calm me down. Like Neil and I had never watched the Parks and Rec.
Oh, yeah?
And we watched it. We watched the entire series over the fall. Yeah. So, like, I had never watched that show. And then all of a sudden, I was like, oh, look what's on Netflix. This will be nice. Mm-hmm. And it was nice, except for the shit where she almost lost to that idiot on the city council race. And I was like, oh, it's a little too close.
Close to home.
I've been rewatching bits of Parks and Rec. And, like, there is a bittersweet element to it now. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, because Leslie Knope is such, you know, such a clear, like, Hillary analog. And so you just, like, see what's ahead for people like that and, like, strong women trying to make it in politics. And just the general attitude of this optimism about local government that is lost now. And it's just so depressing.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm optimistic about local government.
Yeah.
I'm extremely fired up about the alderman race in my ward in Chicago.
Is it 40th ward?
49th. I'm extremely fired. Like, I get very Leslie Knope about it. Like, I just, and so I've got that little flame burning. But I don't need to watch. I saw Dunkirk this summer. I was like, great, I never need to see that again. And I hope I don't have to watch another movie for all time.
No more war, okay?
Very well done.
No more war.
Thank you. Not going to think about this for as long as I can because I just don't need to see it.
Can I recommend Paddington 2 just to all the listeners out there that need something happy in their life? I was listening to a podcast about it on the way over here and almost started crying walking down the street. Yes. So if you need an escape, head to the theater, see Paddington 2. Watch Paddington 1 on Netflix.
Yeah.
See Paddington 2 in the theaters. You won't be disappointed.
Neil and I almost watched it the other night based on your recommendation.
I told
on Netflix.
You.
I heavily co-sign.
Okay, Paddington.
It's wonderful.
Okay, you know what, Paddington,
Paddington 2
I see
twice
you.
In theaters. The ending still puts a tear in my eye.
I've also now seen Paddington 2 twice.
Mm-hmm. Who would have known that we would be driven to this?
Yeah.
I think it's more like, who would know that this cruel universe would offer us such a kind gift?
Yeah.
Like, we don't deserve Paddington. Mm-hmm. We don't. Mm-mm. We deserve Dunkirk.
Ooh. Boy.
Dunkirk is a very well-made movie, but it's the movie we deserve.
I feel like we deserve 50 Shades Freed.
I deserve 50 Shades Freed. Yeah. Let me tell you what, I love a terrible movie. Mm-hmm. Well, that's not true. I'm not going to have any fun watching this movie, but I'm going to have fun writing about it. So on that note, thank you so much for listening to TV Party. You can find us on Twitter at TV Party COS. You can also find us at consequenceofsound.net, probably with some kind of tag that I don't know yet. If you have a question you'd like answered on the show, you can reach out to us on Twitter to do that.
You can also leave us a review on iTunes or Podchaser or whatever podcatcher you use. TV Party is a production of the Consequence Podcast Network. Check out our expanding roster of music, film, and television podcast programming at consequenceofsound.net.
This show is recorded and produced in Chicago, Illinois, and recorded and engineered by this one douchebag, Clint Worthington.
That's me. I'm the douchebag.
Thanks to you guys for being on the show. Is there anything in particular you want to plug that people can see, do, listen to, watch?
You can find me on Twitter. I'm at Caroline Zeta. If you reach out to me, please use the hashtag crockpotisinnocent, which, yes, is a real hashtag that the Crockpot Company is, I believe, totally seriously, I actually don't know, using. So
Crockpot sales are going to plummet.
I don't know. They're an incredibly useful tool. Julie?
They are.
I am off of all social media right now, so you can't find me, so...
But is there anything you want to plug?
Down in front, the movie Riffing Crew that I work with, it's every second Tuesday at North Bar on North and Ashland in Chicago. This month, February the 13th, they're doing Karate Kid. I'm not performing, but I did write on it. And next month, Allison, in March, they're doing The Breakfast Club.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, which you still have never seen.
Which I still have never seen.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I will be writing and performing on The Breakfast Club.
Well, I guess I'll be seeing it soon. Yeah.
Don't you forget to check it out.
Oh, snaps.
Oh, God.
This is what I bring to the table.
You can find me on Twitter at Allison Hsu. You can also listen to Julie and I talk about Outlander in its off season on Podlander Drunkcast and Outlander Podcast. That's okay. You're drunk most of the time.
Yeah.
Also debating Doctor Who is another thing. Caroline and I recorded that this morning at 8:15 a.m. It's been a very chatty day for us.
You can find me on Twitter at AlcoHollywood. You can also find my other podcasts, AlcoHollywood at AlcoHollywood.com and Nathan Rabin's HappyCast at NathanRabin.com.
I would like to add one final thing. If you want to know more of Caroline's thoughts about This Is Us, which you definitely do, she wrote a killer piece for the AV Club that ran today, the day we're recording this, which will definitely still be up, you know, for eternity and then hopefully in the Library of Congress, but definitely on Monday, about This Is Us and its fascination with the way that Jack dies. I really recommend it. We will tweet it. Go find it. It was such a smart, fun, thoughtful read. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back next week talking about The Good Place. Bye.
Bye.
Consequence Podcast Network.